All right, good evening. And tonight on the home stretch with Agent Durant, and I am Agent Durant, we have another special guest, Genevieve Russell, straight from Jamaica, live from Jamaica right now. Thank you, Ashley, for joining us again as well. How you doing, Genevieve?
I'm fine. How are you?
I can't complain. So this is our first time meeting, but I know a little bit about you. So I'm going to read off your bio just a little bit. 400-meter hurdler, Commonwealth Game champion in the four hurdles and the 4x4. You were a CARIFTA Games champion. I remember the CARIFTA Games days. You were a 2012 IAAF World Junior champion, and you were a silver medalist at the World Champs in the mixed relay. So quite some accolades you have there. So tell me, how did you get involved with track and field?
I got involved in track and field at a very tender age. You know, Jamaica is a country known for sports, especially track and field. And my older sister, she used to do track and field for her high school. And you know this big event in Jamaica called Boys and Girls Championship? Well, she performed there, and I saw on TV, and I said, you know, I want to be like my sister because I look up to her. So that's how I got involved. I got involved at the age of eight.
I thought it was five.
Yeah.
I read five online.
I wouldn't call five a serious, because we have this game. We have sports day in the Caribbean, as you know. We just play the lime race, crocus bags. I wouldn't call that serious. But my seriousness starts at age eight when you went to primary champs going up to high school.
That's still a young age to be serious, though. But in Jamaica, yeah, it's the real. But in Jamaica,
I train every day.
But is it Jamaica is the real deal, though? You know, is it that?
Yeah.
When you're a kid in Jamaica, is it that you see a path forward through track? Like, why is it that track is so big in Jamaica?
Because it gets a lot of support from the people. You know, when you're going to the national stadium, it's packed compared to football, or it's packed compared to cricket. So it's just a feeling that you have people coming out to watch you. You're walking in the town, your people hailing you and say, oh, that's the athlete, or big up yourself, athlete. So it's a pride to be an athlete in Jamaica, and then you get to travel the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it's just a plus.
Yeah, yeah, I can see that. Okay, so eight years old, you're serious about things. So tell me about it. Tell me about the journey.
The journey was, I would say, rough. I didn't know my pet event. I was doing everything. I was doing the 3,000, even
the
walking
what?
It. I was doing
Hold on. Are you doing the what?
3,000 meters, doing a lot of laps.
At Lord.
I was doing 800, I was doing 100, I was doing everything. Because in Jamaica, we have this system where they recruit you to a high school, you get a scholarship, so you can participate in the Boys and Girls Championship. And as I said before, I wanted to be just like my sister. My mom is seeing me on TV, traveling on the bus outside of my normal parish because I'm from Manchester. And Kingston is an hour and a half away. So you know you're going on the toll road. There's a lot of excitement. So my journey moving on, I got recruited in grade six. I was 10, youngest to start high school. By Homo Technical High School and coached by Mr. Maurice Wilson at the time. And then my journey just took off, and I saw a lot of senior athletes such as Bernta Camby in the day, Melanie Walker, Kali Spencer, Asafa Powell, you name them, Usain Bolt. And I was like, I want to wear the national gears. And that's when it lead on to CARIFTA Games.
Mm-hmm. And what event do you compete in at the CARIFTA Games? Because you did a lot.
I did a lot. I did the pentathlon. I did high jump, 4x4, 4x1. Because as I said before, I went to a championship school. We're known for winning championships. So it's all about accumulating points. So I had to do like four events. So I wasn't really sure about the event that I'll be good in senior year. So I was doing like the high jump, the long jump, the 100-meter hurdles, 70-meter hurdles, 80-meter hurdles. So I just did that in CARIFTA Games just, you know, get medals and accumulate points in high school as well.
You know, for our state.
So when did you decide to specialize?
I decided to specialize in 2011. One of my teammates fell sick and couldn't participate in championship, boys and girls championship. And because I already could have done the 100 meter hurdles, I already had the technique. I was participating in the 4x4, the pen relays at Caribbean Games. My coach switched me over to the 4 hurdles so I could accumulate the points because, you know, it's competing for the championship. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't do so well my first year doing the 4 hurdles. And then it was Carifta after the Boys and Girls Championship. And I won, surprisingly. So I decided, you know, I'm going to put this as an event and drop the high jump. And then I moved on 2012 to the World World Juniors, and I got gold medal. And I decided, you know, I'm going to put on the rest. I didn't get any gold medals in a big major championship like this, in the long jump or the 400 meter. So I'm saying to myself, this is the event that I'm going to do if I'm going professional.
Hold on, we're going to rewind here because you skimmed over some things. First, for the statesiders who don't know what the CRIFTA Games are, because we have a lot of folks who didn't come up in the Caribbean. I ran in the CRIFTA Games. I know exactly what they are. So for you statesiders, the CRIFTA Games are essentially our regional championship in the Caribbean. So any athlete in track and field that is going to be anybody essentially competes at the CRIFTA Games. And when I ran in the 200, I was lucky enough to go head-to-head with Usain Bolt. Lucky me. So if you're winning the CRIFTA Games, yeah, exactly. So if you're winning the CRIFTA Games, you're somebody. It's the best of the best in the Caribbean, essentially, under a certain age group. And then you went on to win the World Juniors, mm-hmm. which would be the next step in the progression. So essentially, you're following the stages on becoming the best.
Correct.
So was the World Juniors...
And you chose...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Was the World
Juniors... No, I was going to ask, because you chose the 400...
We have Zoom lag.
I don't know. I have the delay, or if you have the delay.
It's Let's Zoom. Go. It's you good can Zoom.
Go. Go ahead, Adrian.
I just wanted to know, so the World Juniors, because that's a big meet as well. I don't think folks realize. That's a big, everyone in the world, the best of the best in a certain age group. And you competed, and you won in the under 20 category, correct? So that's everyone who's 19, essentially, and under. And so... That was your first major international medal?
No, individual. Okay. In 2010, I went to the World Juniors again, but I got it in the 4x4.
Okay, so you got some experience.
And World Youth as well.
So you had some experience.
Yeah, but this is my first major.
I want to hear about the World Junior meet, the experience at that meet. Because I ran at that meet and I choked. So I want to hear what happened with you. You won.
This is meet 10 in mountain or which
one? No, 2012 individual. 2010 mountain was 4x4.
Okay. I was at mountain.
Yeah.
So this one was Poland. Which one was 2011?
Spain.
2012. Oh, Barcelona. Okay.
Okay. My experience, listen to me, I was nervous. Although I had experience, I was doing the 4 hurdles. I'm so used to doing the long jump at these major championships. I'm so used to doing the 4x4. It's a team thing, you know, it's a team effort. But no, I'm actually doing an individual event that I just started a year before. Because remember, I started 4 hurdles 2011 and I'm coming in fresh 2012. And you had the likes of Shimmer Little at the time. And I think you had a Nigeria girl who had the world lead. I knew nothing about world leads at the time. As I said, I was just participating in the long jump and the 4x4. So I was looking up on world leads. And then I participated at the senior trials with Millian Walker. I look up to Millian Walker and I did well. Going into the World Juniors, I had a sprained ligament in my ankle. So I was devastated. I didn't know what I was going to do. I was going to perform or what. But this was my last year at high school. And my high school coach also was a technical official for the Olympic team that year. And this man grew me from I was 10, you know, shaped me to the athlete I am today. And I was like, I don't care about the sprained ankle. I'm going to dedicate this race to him. I was nervous. You're seeing everyone. You're seeing the best of the best. And some of these athletes who are participating in the World Juniors actually qualify for the Olympic team for their specific countries, like the Kenyans, some USA, you just name it. So I was like, these people are going to Olympics. I didn't have the quality to go to Olympics to get the Olympic mark. So run at Olympics, and everyone with these athletes prepping themselves, moving on to Olympics. So each run, I was nervous, but I was dedicating it to Mr. Maurice Wilson because it was my final hooray for Homo Technical. And I said, like, I'm going out with a bang. And then this will determine which college I'll be going to at the summer. And I decided to stay in Jamaica. And in the finals, I just went blank. I just wanted to finish the race. I was just saying, like, I need to clear all these barriers and run home. And that's exactly what I did.
So what place were you going into the finals?
I was placed first, I think, yeah. Is it either first or second? It's between me and Shimerlita. I'm not really sure at the time.
Okay, so you did have one of the fastest times going in. So at least that alleviated some of the pressure because you know that you were capable of competing against these girls.
Yeah, but you know, as athletes, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. We only see gold. We don't care about the silver or the bronze. Mm-hmm. As young athletes, you see the flag raised and you put a lot of pressure on yourself. And you're like, I don't want to disappoint my coach. I don't want to disappoint my country. I don't want to disappoint my family. And especially, I don't want to disappoint myself. So you're just sticking to the goal, not really looking at the bigger picture, saying that you're actually going to be on the podium. And that is like top three or in the finals as top eight in the world, in World Juniors, like high school, under 20, in the world, you're top eight. So at that time, I wasn't putting a lot of pressure on myself. I just wanted to finish the race because I had the 4x4 as well. I just wanted to finish the race and dedicate the race to Mr. Maurice Wilson.
Mm-hmm. So at least that elevated some more pressure too, because you wasn't focusing on time. You were just like, listen, I just want to finish.
Yeah, I just want to do a good job and just finish the season.
So when you come up with the goal, how did that make you feel?
I didn't feel any different, to be honest. I was a bit surprised as I told you I had a sprained ligament in my ankle, a strain. I didn't really feel away. I just felt like when I go to Jamaica, I'm going to walk high. Because when I go to the airport, there's going to be a lot of cameras flashing. I'm going to be the newspaper. So everything was just running through my mind, thinking about how my mommy feel, how my sister feel, and Mr. Wilson, because at the time they're at the camp for the Olympics, and he's going to, you know, he's feeling like I coach this young lady and she's a World Junior champion.
Yeah.
And so you decided to stay in Jamaica for college, because I know a lot of folks decide to come to the US and enter the NCAA system. Mm-hmm. So what led to your decision to stay in Jamaica?
My decision was solely on my personal goal. I wanted to train with the best. And MVP Track Club is one of the best institutions / UTEC you could train with, because you, at the time, you had Asafa Powell there, Sharon Simpson, Melaine Walker, Holly Spencer, and those two ladies there are the top girls, top five or top six ladies in the 400 meter hurdles. And I'm going to be there training with the best. And I didn't want to stay away from my family, although my mommy and my sister wanted me to go overseas, get the experience. I wanted to come and stay in Jamaica to train with the best and to be surrounded by the best, because I believe that would have pushed me, because I'm around Olympic champions, world champions, people doing the best on the circuit. Mm-hmm.
No, it makes sense. It's a competitive environment. Steel sharpens steel, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel added pressure? Because you chose to do the 400 hurdles. And as a Jamaican, you know, you had the likes of Melaine Walker, Cleese Spencer, and then Dion Hemming, which was the first Jamaican to win an Olympic gold medal. Did you ever feel any pressure going into that event?
Not at the time, because I was really young. I was 19, leaving high school. I wasn't thinking about the pressure. I just wanted to be around these ladies. But as we speak now, the pressure is now. Because, you know, you have the likes of Kali Spencer, Melaine Walker, Dion. These ladies have performed well in the Diamond League, World Championship, Olympics. They have run sub-53. And you're here Jamaica expects a lot from you, because they're saying this is a rich culture. As you know, we have rich culture in sprinting. They expect a lot from the other sprinters to fill the shoes of Usain Bolt or even close. So I'm expecting the same. So I feel that I put a lot of unnecessary pressure on myself to say that I need to do this instead of focusing on myself to reach the goal that I want. Because I believe I can do it. I put in the work. Anybody can do it as long as you put in the work and have the mindset. But you know, when you have a rich culture in Jamaica, you put a lot of pressure on yourself, because even if you make one mistake, you have somebody putting you down. And as athletes, I believe that we need to focus on ourselves. And that's what I'm learning through this pandemic we went through last year with all the lockdown. I have to focus on myself, because at the end of the day, when I get home or when I'm on the track, it's me. Not the people behind the screen cheering me on, not the people behind the screen putting me down. It's me. So it's whether I put in the work or not, or perform well, it's always going to be on me. Because when they put it in the paper, they're not going to say, oh, the Jamaicans didn't perform well. They're going to say Janeve Russell or XYZ athlete didn't perform well. So I'm learning slowly but surely, and I feel it's coming into place.
Okay, that's good.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Adrian. It's an interesting point that you make about the pressure that you put on yourself, because we just interviewed Ashley's former coach, former college coach, Coach Tanja, and she's a, you know, she was a 52-62 in the four hurdles, I believe is what she ran. And she talks about her main thing is that she did not put pressure on herself. You know, even when she was a younger age, she talked about how she just kept it fun. But even as she got older, she never really like put the pressure on herself, and she attributes that to a lot of her success. So it's a good point that you're making, that without that pressure, you're kind of free to just race. And it's just like, I'm racing to win and not worrying about everything else.
Yeah. And that is where we strain as athletes. You know, we set our personal goals and say, you know, I wake up so early in the morning, I'm so heavy, I'm doing all of this. Why I'm not reaching this goal? Why I'm not doing this? And instead of just letting everything go and just let everything fall in place, because you already put in work, you're thinking of what if? Why did I feel like this yesterday? What's going to happen the next day? And I feel that's what happens when we're competing and the pressure comes on, and that's where we underperform and don't understand, especially when you know you're hitting times in training, you're doing well. But when it's time to compete, you're going back way back and saying, oh, I didn't feel good the day before, I didn't do this in training. And you just forget all the plans that you had and all the work you put in from September to a major championship.
Yeah. Was there any particular race that you felt like you really started to understand this and understand that, you know, I could just let it happen, I'm working hard in training, and then like I'm gonna just let it go and stop putting so much added pressure on myself?
Great question. This was 2008 at, I think it was Luzon, when I ran 53.4. I didn't put any pressure on myself. I was just like, I put in the working train. I just was going to let it flow and just do what I need to do and execute the race how my coach wanted me to execute it. And I just did exactly that. I was even surprised at the time that I ran, because it was a very cold day and don't like running in the cold. You see, because I'm from the tropical island, I'm just used to the heat. And everybody was complaining that they're not getting the times that they wanted. It's too cold. They're not feeling their body. I was just like, you know, it is what it is. I don't have anything to lose. I'm just going to execute well. I've been doing well in training. No injuries. I'm just going to go out there and hit it.
You ran fast.
Yeah. I was running like 53s all year round in 2018. I was running 53.7, 53.4, 53.6.
Oh, I was, man,
just doing
53s. Oh, man. So I know, just like Ashley, you were one of the athletes who were impacted by, you know, the Olympics being rescheduled. I know you, I was looking up your last experience at the Olympics, and you had an injury that you were dealing with. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, it was like 3 weeks before the senior championship. I was doing great. I had the top three times in the world. Going into the senior championship, I was, you know, the best, was looking forward to make, everybody was looking forward for me to make the team. And I was doing a hurdle and I felt a little soreness in my quad, but I didn't take it as anything. I was just stretching between reps. And on my last rep, I cleared hurdles and just fell to the ground. I found out I had a grade 2 tear in rectus femoris. And then I had 2 weeks before the championship. Luckily, because I was top three in the world, I was a wild card. So I had time to prove fitness. So I was still on the Olympic team, but I wasn't the surety to run the individual event. I had to prove fitness. So I was back and forth in Miami, trying to get treatment, camping in Europe. I was devastated, can't train, losing fitness because it was a grade 2 tear. And I decided, like, this is my first Olympic team. And I want, even if I'm running this heat alone, I want to be there. And I started to like take painkillers, go through the pain, finally prove my fitness. And the doctors in Miami were saying, I can't believe that you made all three rounds. Because based on the tear in the ear, they didn't expect me to even pass the first round. So that Olympic game showed that it just takes a mind and guts to move through. Because, you know, I had the injuries. I was sitting down all the time, devastated, crying, wondering. I was like, this is my first Olympic team. I don't have anything to lose. Although the country looking forward for me to be a medalist, I'm just going to go out there and do my best because I know that I can do it. And just making the first run, going in the blocks, completing the race was a medal for me that year.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's pretty cool. So you're making Olympic finals while injured. That's impressive. I'm looking forward to the next Olympics when it eventually happens.
As you go into the next Olympic, the 400 meter hurdles is now like a premier event.
Mm-hmm.
I think we had a world record last year. And then with the increased competition, especially from the likes of Jamaicans like Christiana Tracy, Rochelle Claxton, who's already a medalist as well, mm-hmm. how are you preparing yourself going into this Olympic season? Once we have it, fingers crossed.
Well, right now, I'm just focusing on me. I am just building me as an athlete and as an individual. This is going to be my second Olympic game, and I'm planning to make it, you know, if I'm injury-free and mentally strong. And my game is just to just take it a race at a time, compete the best as I know I can, and just push myself in training and execute what I know I need to execute, listen to my coach, listen to my body, and just go out there fearless.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of things do you do to mentally prepare yourself?
Well, I'll visualize what I want to do out there. And I'll also like meditate for a minute, you know, deep breathing and just talk to myself. I'm like pep talking myself. I say, I have nothing to lose. You know, everybody's going out there. Everybody's training hard. Everybody's feeling the same pain when you're running the 400 or the 400 hurdles. So it's just to want it more. And I'm just going out there to compete and fight to the finish.
So it's funny because I'm hearing, you know, you're one of the best in the world and you got into this event by accident.
Yes.
So how
my favorite event was the long jump.
What's that?
My favorite event was the long jump.
Your favorite event was the long jump, but you accidentally got mm-hmm. entered in the four hurdles.
Yeah. All because my teammate was ill and couldn't perform at the Boys and Girls Championship. I had to replace her, and that was just it from there. That was just it. I was like, oh, an individual medal, and I've just started this. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to continue.
It's so funny. Yeah. But all these people I keep interviewing, we keep talking to, half of them started out in a whole different event and they didn't even know that, you know, they were going to try something else. Dwight Phillips told me he was a 400 meter runner all the way up until sophomore year in college. And then all of a sudden they were like, hey, no, you're a long jumper. Then he goes out and he's one of the best. So it's just funny how, you know, it's just, you don't know something. You just never know.
Yeah, you never know.
And but that's, I also think it's important that we don't specialize too early too, because you just never know what direction you'll go into.
Yeah, that's true. I feel so. Because I was just focusing on the long jump. And look at me, the four hurdles.
Yeah. Completely different place.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. That's a good point, Ashley. Not specializing too early. And, you know, with parents who have young kids starting out track, because we're hearing all these folks are starting at 5 and 8 and 9. And, you know, this is when folks are getting involved and it's great. But it is OK for them to continue to do different events and different things within track and not just like, OK, you're a sprinter, sprint, you're a jumper, jump, because then, you know, you could be cutting off unlimited potential. You could be, you know, focusing on long jump and you should be the next world record holder in the intermediate hurdles.
Yeah, because what I noticed at the Boys and Girls Championship, you just don't do one event. You see, if you're a sprinter, you do long jump. If you're specializing in jumping alone, you do the high jump or the hurdles. If you just want to throw, you're doing the javelin, you're doing the discus, you're doing the shot put. As long as you're training for it, you're going to do it at the Boys and Girls Championship.
Yeah, no, that's good.
So training at with MVP in Jamaica, you have the likes of Elaine, Shelly-Ann Fraser-Pryce, Sherika Williams. Like, you have the top of the top every mm-hmm. day. So what is the atmosphere like at training?
The atmosphere is really good. It's serious. You're looking at these people and it's like they're A-game. They're here and they're putting in the work. You don't have anybody just sitting down and angling and just like, I can't do this. You have everyone there putting in the work. Even when it's hard, you have individuals pushing you. When you're tired doing a set, you have someone taking up and say, come on, man, you can do it. And you're saying to yourself, all right, if this person can do it, I can do it too, because we're all humans. We're all feeling the pain. And it's such a competitive environment because, you know, when you're training, you have a week where you have testing. So it's basically like you have a track meet and you're competing against these people. You know, you have sprinters who are explosive in the jump. You have quarter milers who are better in the longer distance at the 300s or the 400s. So you're competing with the sprinters and the 400 persons in the long jump, or you're competing with the sprinters in the short sprint. So you're competing with, you're being competitive and say, all right, you have an Elaine Thompson. She's good in the short sprint. Let me see how close I can be. Let me see if I can put some pressure. So training with these, even you know you can't put any pressure on her, you know, you're just saying like, I'm going to put pressure because you want that competitive thing for the test week. So it's really good. I love the environment. I love the environment. You know, everyone has one goal, and their one goal is to be on top, and their one goal is just to keep on pushing, and you and them share the same goal. So it's really good to be around.
Yeah. Who's the person who makes the workouts harder?
In the quarter mile section, it would definitely be Stephanie Ann McPherson and Sherika Jackson.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course. They're going to go after it.
Yeah, because, you know, they're 49. So they're going to set the pace and you're there just trying to keep up. And you know you're not the 49 person. But, you know, you just can't, you know, you can't really back off at that time. You just do what you have to do.
Yeah, yeah. No, amazing. So... And so Jamaica, I'm always curious, being from the Virgin Islands and dealing with the Federation. I know and how big track and field is in Jamaica. Do you feel the support from the Federation mm-hmm. and everybody so that you can, you know, have everything you need to pursue these goals?
Well, just frankly, I think they can do a little more. Mm-hmm. And we have a new president, so I'm hoping that they would do more for the athletes. You know, you have upcoming athletes. Not everyone has sponsorship or show contract, and I believe they can do a little more to push persons who are coming to the track meets who are not signed to even go to meet overseas. You know, small meets that are put on in the USA. I think they should help the athletes to develop more. We should have a workshop, basically, to help the coaches transition from high school to senior level, because it's not every high school coach can coach a senior, because it's a completely different level. So I just believe that the Federation can do a lot more, especially for athletes who are not pro athletes who have shoe contract, because the ones who have shoe contract, they have a team behind them. They have a manager. They have an agent. They have a pro coach who actually goes to Olympic, Commonwealth, and World Championship, who knows the works and, you know, communicate with other elite coaches from other countries. So I just believe that Federation should push more, because based on how other people talk, I think that other Caribbean Federation does a lot for their athletes, especially their training overseas. Mm. So I just feel that the Federation can do much more. But not just the pro athletes, but for those who aren't.
Well, it would make sense to invest in your athletes, especially when on the world stage, you're known for having, you know, some of the best in history. So if that's your thing, you run with it.
Exactly. Invest in it, because, you know, track and field is not forever. People retire. You don't have a specific age where you want to retire. Sometimes you just say, oh, I'm going to retire in 29, because everybody have a specific goal. A person can mm-hmm. say, my specific goal to run in the hurdles, 100 meter hurdles, is 12.4. And if I run at 12.4, that's it. So you need to invest in other athletes so they can come up and say, keep the culture rich in track and field in Jamaica.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You sound passionate when you talk about the upcoming athletes and those that are coming after you. Mm-hmm. Are you doing any initiatives that will help promote track and field in Jamaica and opening the doors for other athletes coming after you?
Well, our federation isn't really that open. You have one representative for athletes, and we talk to that specific person and they just relay that message to the federation. It's not like a whole body that they take questionnaires or you can say. You relay this to the person and they relate to the federation and they don't just run with it. So it's specific to them to just jump on it. Because I'm from a rural part in Jamaica. You know, you grew up poor. You don't have a lot of things. You don't have spikes. You don't have shoes. You don't have money to go to school every day or to train every day. So I know how hard it is to run at the Boys and Girls Championship not having the support.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so passionate about it, because I was really lucky enough to go to Homewood and my mother didn't have the money. So Mr. Maurice was usually help me with lunch. And I was lucky enough to board because I couldn't afford to take taxi every day to even come to school, but I didn't miss a class. So for me not to miss a class, for me not to miss a training session, I had to do boarding. So imagine the other kids now growing up, because, you know, time's getting harder. The price is going up on food, gas, you name it. So just imagine what is happening now.
So you were able to, so because you were able to stay at the school, that's why you were able to have the opportunity. Okay.
Yeah, train every day, go to school every day, because training over late and I have to take two transportation to reach home.
Yeah. Okay. Now that makes sense. And how did you get that opportunity to stay at the school?
Well, Homo Technical is naturally a boarding school because it's a school of sports. You're recruiting athletes for whether it's cricket, football, netball, or track and field. And they don't specifically recruit athletes in the area because Homewood is in Christiana. And I'm from Mandeville. And you have people from there in St. Anne. These are parishes in Jamaica. So you have people from St. Anne, Kingston, coming into Homewood. So, you know, we have things that we say patois. We have different levels of patois. So me chant patois, the people from Tona understand me. Because their patois is drawn. It's like they're singing. So it's just a different thing in Jamaica.
Hey, we don't have subtitles, okay?
Yeah. When I'm talking to my teammates at home, when it's different patois. Sometimes you can't even understand. Because, for example, if I say me a go, somebody from Trelawney where you sent Bolt is from, and I said, me, I'll go up there still. So, you know, it's a different thing. So you can tell who's from which parish.
Hey, listen, there's people on St. Croix that I cannot understand. You would not believe it. I'm like, how is this possible? So I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So that's how I was able to board, because it's naturally a boarding school and they recruit athletes from all over the island.
So because you were so good, they recruited you, and then that enabled you to have the opportunity to board at that school. And then so you were able to train and go to class. And like, what would have happened if you,
I wouldn't say I was that good. Homewood is like UTEC. They build athletes. If they see that you have a potential, they say, oh, I like how this person is running. I like how they flow and how their body moves. We can build this person. So I wouldn't say I was that good. As I said before, I didn't know which event I was going to do, but Homewood worked with me. They had me in the long jump. They had me over the hurdles. They had me over the bar doing high jump. So Homewood and UTEC is similar in a way that they build athletes. They work, they nurture you.
And what's the path?
Yeah. So they invest in you.
And what's the path without track for folks? Like, if you're coming up and there's no opportunity to go to a school like that because of sports, then what is the path that, you know, just say you're not a track athlete?
Because track
was an opportunity for me to leave St. Croix. It gave me the opportunity to come to Jersey. It's why I was able to go to college. So it provided everything for me to get where I am now. You know, I'm a college head coach. So if it wasn't for track, who knows where I would have been. So I'm just curious. I'm hearing how it was so, you know, important to your story where you ended up. So what would have been? And I know how Jamaica is.
Yeah. If it wasn't for track, my mother grew up, you know, I grew up in a single home, and my mommy had a dream to be a hair hostess. She wanted to be a flight attendant. So if it wasn't for track, I would definitely pursue my mother's dream. Because, you know, I like to do the makeup, the uniform, because I like to dress up. So, like, I definitely would have done that if it wasn't for track and field.
And you would have been able to travel.
At the same time. So, you know, I was able to travel. I'd meet stars at the same time, because I would probably be on a flight where there's Usain, Shelley, but, you know, those people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be fun.
No, that's pretty cool. I'm always talking about, when we talk about sports and I guess upward mobility, you know, track is a sport that provides opportunities for a lot of folks. All you need are your feet. You know, you don't need special equipment. You know, I mean, you know, you're hoping at some point to get some spikes, because that's what you're saying. Like, I need to get a pair of spikes. But, you know, a lot of folks start out with nothing, and you still can, you know, you still can show your talent. You can still improve. You can still build some self-esteem. So I'm always, you know, I'm an advocate for track just because it's a sport that provides opportunity and anyone can take part in it. It's not exclusive. You don't need a boat or a special, you know, a special stick or whatever. So,
all you have to do is get up and run, basically.
Exactly.
Yeah, you just need the equipment, shoes, spikes.
Yeah, and you end up being able to see the. How many countries have you been to now? Because of this, you know, this sport that provide opportunity. You've been all over the world.
Yeah, I've been.
A girl from rural Jamaica, country Jamaica. You know.
Who was excited to take bus to Kingston.
You were happy just to get on the toll road. You're like, I can get on the toll road. I'm on a bus, on a paved, was it paved? You know, it's like, it's different.
Smooth.
Yeah.
A long ride, hour and a half.
I was talking, and we were talking to Aileen.
For 14 hours. Oh.
Yeah, we were talking to Aileen, same thing, from the country, you know?
Yeah, so, we're from the same parish.
There you go. This is why track is great, folks. So,
definitely opportunities.
Yeah. And you meet a lot of people. You develop great friendships, because I'm friends with Shimmer and Little. Although we compete against each other, I'm friends with Ashley. Like, you know? And these people are in the same event. So you create friendship all over the world.
Yeah, well, that's how it is, right? You know, when you're in the race, you're like, I want to destroy this person. But then afterwards, it's like, okay, we're cool. You know, we're good. We're friends.
Yeah.
It's just in that, you know, 53 seconds, you're like, hey, look, this, I'm... Because
it's business. It's business.
Yeah, it's all business that time.
It's all business.
Yeah. So how's training?
During Corona.
I was just going to ask that. Yeah. Now I was going to ask during how's training during, you know, the pandemic, and, you know, how is it impacting your training? Yeah.
Oh, well, last year it impacted it a lot, because, you know, when Corona just came out, we had a lot of cases, everyone was panicking, our government body didn't know what to do, so we had to do a lockdown. I wasn't even sure about competition going on locally or overseas. So, you know, we're losing fitness. As I said before, it's not every athlete has a gym in their complex or a gym in their home. There's not a lot of athletes who have a running trail. You know, a place to keep fit, because they're on lockdown. Places are on lockdown. You can't use places with people. So it was very frustrating. I had to try and keep fit, you know, using the gym, doing skipping, because, you know, running up and down the road on the pavement, it's a small pavement we have and stuff like that. So when the country finally opens up, we can train. And then we had strict protocols. There's not more than 15 people allowed around each other, and we have a big group. So now we have to be alternating times, splitting the groups into three to ensure that including the coaching staff makes the 15. So you're not seeing everybody anymore. You're training based on your event. So the 400 people have their own times compared to sprinters, compared to the field eventers. So, you know, you have to be ensuring that you're finished training a specific time so the other groups can come in, and so you can reach home before the curfew happens. And although it has lessened down, cases are still rising, but the protocols aren't as strict as it was last year, meaning there's no lockdown. We still have curfew. We still are allowed to train with the same group of persons, but you have to have on your mask. And sometimes it's difficult to be gymming with the mask, because, you know, the gym is a compact place, you're hot, you're dizzy, you have to have on your gym. Every time you're going to, for something, you have to have on your mask because you can't be talking to each other. If you're running close with someone, you have to have on your mask. And that's the only disadvantage I have because the heat is hot in Jamaica and I have to have on the mask during training. And then you have to ensure that you're finished doing everything you have to do so you can reach home because not everyone who drives is to ensure that they can make it home in public transportation because you have to be off the road by 7:30 p.m. because curfew is 8 o'clock. And you have to ensure that you come home, you prep this, you prep that, so you can come back the next day and just do everything in a rush. Mm-hmm. So it's every, you have to just be organized now and very careful.
Okay. Well, learning organization skills is not a bad thing to learn during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that you learned during the pandemic?
Oh, no, not really. More than
you didn't take up a new hobby, you didn't do anything extra because I mean, we had plenty of time on our hands.
My new hobby, I'm a plant mom.
Oh, me also, too.
Yes, and I also watch a lot of K dramas.
Are you good at see? I had a plant, but it died, and so I'm really bad at it.
No, I'm going through my fourth one. I'm not good. So I decided to plant like pepper because my plants are not surviving. So I decided to plant pepper, scallion.
Oh, you see, I don't feel as bad anymore because at first, like I had cactus and I was just like, oh, they're easy to take care of. They don't need much water.
Yes.
And they died. But I have crops now and they're flourishing. So I'm excited about that. But
my cactus didn't even budge. I didn't even see it move.
Nah, I felt bad for my plant. I really felt bad.
Uh-huh.
I felt like I tried to be good at it, and I put it outside one day when it was like sunny and raining, and then when I came back later, it was like drowned and scorched. So I was like, oh no, it looked horrible. The leaves were falling off. So then, I nursed it back to full health, and then I went out of town during the winter time, and I forgot to keep the air on a nice level. When I came back, it was just frozen, dead. I felt so bad. Yeah. So my plant dad.
I guess
you have a business.
Was that?
I also see that you are running a business. So do you want to tell us a little bit about your side hustle?
Oh,
and
yes.
How important it is to at least, brand yourself outside of track and field?
Yeah, it's very important to brand yourself outside track and field. You want others to know that you're more than an athlete. You have... Doesn't matter if you're an athlete or you're someone who works in an office job, you can have a side hustle. You want to make people know that you're more than the person that you present to them. So I'm basically running a purse collection. I sell purses, because I like dressing up, as I said before. I like makeup, although I cannot do it. I practice very hard and I cannot master it. I don't understand why I'm not mastering it like I do the track and field. So I decided to sell purse because, as I said, I'm from the rural area in Jamaica, in Mandeville. I didn't grow up rich. So I decided to do this so I can invest and put the money aside so I can put back. I have a niece who is autistic. She has a severe type. So she doesn't talk. She can't really help herself. And it's my sister alone. So what I'm doing right now is whatever money I make, I put aside because I really want to have a foundation for autism in Mandeville. Because where I'm from, there's no foundation in Mandeville for autistic. It's only in Kingston. And I feel like it's a disadvantage because I said before, it's not everyone can afford to come to Kingston. Mm-hmm. So when I'm able to do that and have a foundation, this is where I'm going to branch off now. I'm more than an athlete. I will have a foundation helping others outside of track and field. I'll be helping persons with special needs, especially autism, because what people don't know is that autism is everywhere, and it's not everyone who has autism can speak. It's not everyone who has autism is specialized in a specific subject or hobby. You have persons with autism who cannot speak at all, like my niece, who have tantrums and are uncontrollable. And I feel that there are not a lot of educational persons in Jamaica who can handle these individuals. And my sister does a great job because I can't even manage my niece, to be honest, when she's here. But my sister does a great job. So I was wondering if it's a motherly love. So this side hustle, selling purses, saving the money, putting it aside, is to help parents, educational personnel in Jamaica to learn about this special needs more. And we can have it across the island, not only in Kingston, but across the 14 parishes. Yeah.
That's a great cause to use your platform to kind of, you know, to trumpet. Because that is an issue. I mean, yeah, if Kingston has all the resources and all the smaller towns don't really have access, I mean, that's a story of a lot of places across, you know, even up here, you know, underprivileged communities, communities that don't have access to resources. That's a good fight. Absolutely. So right now, I don't know, both you and Ashley are training for the Olympics. I haven't been keeping up on which announcements they've made. Are things still supposed to be this summer?
Yeah.
So far, so good.
So far, so good?
Yeah, I don't believe they can cancel it back because they spent billions to host it. So yeah. I think they're just going to go ahead and just no spectators. And I believe that if they want spectators there, I think they should use the citizens of the country to be there. And then persons can pay online to watch it, because at the same time, you'd have paid to come and see it.
Yeah.
So for not to lose money, use an online platform and pay to watch it, because if you're coming to the Olympics, you still have to buy a plane fare and a season ticket to watch it. So that's how I think they should approach it, whether it's international or local major championship, like the Boys and Girls Championship, we normally just go and pay. So I believe that for them not to lose money, charge us to watch it online, because we'll eventually be paying to go in.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think they can cancel it again.
Yeah, well, they're finding all other ways to deal with it. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate that the experience would be completely different from the last Olympics, because one of the things is we have to be in there like 2 days before in the village and then out right after you race. So you probably won't even get to interact with as many athletes as you usually do. Mm-hmm. And you know, create more friendships or anything. Nope.
Wait, is that the new rule?
Yeah, I believe so.
So wait, you have to come in, compete, and leave?
You have to be there. Yep. You have to get into the village, to the athlete's village. The athlete's village, you are going to be there 2 days before, and then you have to leave 2 days after.
Yeah.
Two days after. You can
be in Tokyo after you compete.
But I mean, so just so it's everyone's kind of funneled into the village based off of their competition date. How are they going to do the opening and closing ceremonies?
I don't think we're going to be attending that.
Mm-hmm.
What? Oh man, that's whack. Yeah. Oh man, that's unfortunate. I'm sorry. The whole Olympic experience. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be completely different, but at least we get COVID to say we experienced it differently.
Yeah,
I guess for a virtual opening ceremony. But there's nothing like the energy on the when you're down there, the energy on the floor.
Yeah. That's the thing that we're going to lose.
So wait, so that is So all of us were there in 2016. So all of us had the privilege and the honor of being in what could possibly have been the last opening and closing ceremonies.
Yeah.
Yes.
So we do have something to tell our children after we tell them that we made it through the pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we did a lot of stuff, man. A lot of accomplishments here. Make it through the pandemic, last opening closing ceremonies. You know, this is great. And I was born in the 80s, so I made it through the 90s. So I got all the best hip hop too. So it's just a whole string of wins there.
Yeah.
I think this pandemic definitely shows us gratitude. I think we so take for granted so many opportunities that we have, and now that everything is changing, is you have to be you know, you have to have gratitude for things that you have experienced so far, because travel will be different.
Yeah.
How we interact with each other on the circuit and everything is going to be so different. So, you know, we can take some gratitude into, like, we have some good experiences, and let's see. I think we don't take for granted everything that is coming.
Absolutely. Yeah. I agree. And I'm an optimist. So I look at these situations just like we would look at anything as an athlete, right? It's hard. It's been hard. But usually when things are hard, you know, there's something afterwards, like some sort of payoff. So I do think that the fact that people have endured this pandemic and, you know, they have to make it through this, that when we're finally out of it, that people will have a different appreciation for what we do have. And, you know, you might see some folks doing some amazing things. So even, I mean, look at track right now, you know, in the college system, the folks who got a chance to compete, they're out there breaking records and running really fast. And I'm like, wow.
It's like, yeah.
You know, so it's exactly. So I'm looking forward to seeing how everyone responds to when they finally get to, you know, just take a deep breath and say, we're done with this. I'm looking forward to the positive results. You know, we get bombarded with the negative, but I'm looking forward to the good stuff. So,
and you're getting ready to compete. So are you like itching? Cause it's been so long and it's like, okay, I'm getting ready to compete now.
I competed last week as well. I did a 200 meter. Mm-hmm. So now I'm doing a 400 meter tomorrow. I'm a bit nervous. Cause I'm like, I know that I can do well, but I'm just like, I don't know. It's like, I'm running about the 400. No, I'm excited to run. I'm just feeling a little nerves kicking in.
Which one is do you find to be tougher, the four or the four hurdles?
The four hurdles. Everyone always said, okay. I'm the first person to hear that saying it.
But yeah.
You don't have any obstacles running the 400. You don't have any obstacles because, you know, when lactic reach you, you just want, yeah, when lactic reach you, you just want to clear the hurdles, and you can clear it wrong. You can drop that trailer too quick and clip the hurdles and fall and don't get to complete the race, or you can clip the hurdles and you're 1 second behind, and when you're leading, somebody else passes. Because I believe that the 400, everyone has a flat, you know, you're running, but if you clip that hurdle wrong because you want to clear it so fast because you can't wait to reach the line, it's game over.
I feel like any normal human would be like
harder.
Yeah, no, I feel like just a regular person would be like, okay, a 400 or a 400 with hurdles. The one with hurdles would be harder. But for some reason, a lot of four hurdles are like, oh, I hate the 400. They're like, oh, you can rest over the hurdles, or you have more of a rhythm.
You can rest over the hurdles? I've never heard anyone say that.
The 48 guy.
You can rest?
Apparently.
Because it's a rhythm.
It's like the split second you're going over a hurdle, you're not running, I guess. You're floating, you're resting. I don't know. Hey, look, four is where I call it quits. So I don't, I don't know anything about any hurdles, running any hurdles. I'm good. No, so ask you about you said you make purses. What other hobbies do you have?
I don't really have any other hobbies. Because based on how training is, I'm so tired. I'm just dedicated to watching K-dramas.
Wait, yeah, you did say that. So wait, what are these things? To watching what?
The Korean dramas. Shortened for K-dramas.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm so dedicated to it. Like when I come from training, I prepare my breakfast. The first thing I pop up, K-drama. So when I take a nap and getting ready for my second session, I'm getting ready. I'm watching K-drama. Then I'm out the door. After this podcast, I'm going to make dinner and I'm going to watch my K-drama.
I'm going to Google
this. Yeah, I'm just really dedicated to it. Yeah, I'm really dedicated to it.
They're so energetic, like they're, I don't know, very vibrant when they're in the ocean.
And their facial expression. Because I picked up a few lines, like I'll say, Anya, when I go to training and I hear the program, I say, what? That means wow. So, you know, I pick up a few little stuff that I'll do around my teammates to make them laugh. Mm. So I really don't have much hobbies. right? No, but
oh man, you're a full time track athlete, man. So you're a full time track athlete, so it's understandable.
Trust me, very difficult.
Olympics coming up. Yeah, oh yeah,
very difficult. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very difficult to find time to do something that I love. I like eating out.
Oh, I'm well, there.
Well, I mean, yeah. These days you can't really. I guess you can, but you know,
it can't really. Exactly. I like eating out in the nightlife, the cool breeze when you're eating out, dining outside a restaurant in Jamaica. Well, no, you have to be sweating while you're eating because the heat, the sun.
Hey, man. Hey, you know, it's 20 degrees up here, so I don't want to hear about that. Sweating and you're lucky, okay? You absorb all of that nice heat.
Sorry to hear that part. But Genevieve, tell us how we can follow you. Tell our listeners how we can follow you, where we can get in contact with you, and we'll get our purses.
Oh, okay. You can follow me on my Instagram, Genevieve Russell, and my purse page is Eve Purse Collection. The Eve is shortening for Genevieve.
Nice.
I do make some TikTok videos, but I don't remember my TikTok username.
Oh, come on. You gotta send it to us so I can put it on. I'll tag it to the video.
Okay.
I remember the last time we talked to you, I can't remember the dance that you were doing.
It's which dance again? I remember.
Yeah, it was a while, but I know you were into the dancing and you were like the training.
I was into the dancing, but now K-drama.
Yeah. Well, Genevieve, I appreciate you coming on and chatting with us. Definitely going to be following, you know, and seeing what happens. I'm looking forward to this next Olympics. Absolutely. I wish you the best of luck. And
thank you so much.
Till next time.
Yes. Thank you for coming on and joining our conversation. Next race.
Thank you so much. And hopefully I'm going to see you, Ashley, on the circuit.
Hopefully
in Jamaica.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Or if I get invited to Jamaica.
Yes.
I'm trying to go to Jamaica.
Well, let's go. Make the move.
I'm down.
Are you guys quarantining? Do we have to quarantine?
Yeah, you have to quarantine for 2 weeks.
Oh, what? Yeah. No.
But where you're quarantined, you know, you have the pool.
Yeah.
So the quarantine is like
another 14 days. I did that at home and then I just did 4 days again. I was like, I'm tapped out of quarantine now.
Yeah, I never heard a traveler complain about our quarantine because the specific hotel that it goes to is like, you know, they're having fun. So their quarantine is like just
quarantine in Jamaica.
The only difference is the only difference is they're not going in the town to get the jerk chicken and jerk pan.
Oh, that's all I was thinking about this whole time. Difference. I was only thinking about pan chicken this whole time.
You can get jerk chicken at the hotels, but you just want to be at the roadside. You know, get the jerk chicken and people, your coconut water.
That's all I want in life.
That's the only thing you'll miss out.
Yeah. Thank you, Genevieve. Have a good one. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
All right. Have a good night.
Okay, same to you guys.